You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
And now technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hi there, welcome to the final Tech Talk Radio Summer Series installment. I'm Dr. Ron, your host for this week. I hope you've been enjoying our best ofs while the panel's been enjoying a break away from the studio. We're returning live next week, Monday the 6th. This is exciting. Would you agree? We're all looking forward to getting back into the routine and catching up with you and all the other regulars. In this final summer series, we're starting with special guest Brian Paddo. Brian is a creative director at Evolving Communications, and Brian completed his honours degree in multimedia design at Swinburne, and he knows his film and television, I'm here to tell you. He's also responsible for a lot of the pre-production that goes on behind the scenes here at Tech Talk Radio. Brian joined us on the panel in June last year to talk about the latest goings on in film and television and the crossover into games. Then we'll be hearing from talented duo Scott Dawkins and Shona Urquhart, together comprising TV Live on Stage, and authors of the viral YouTube video Vodafail, which laments the Vodafone Hutchison 3 merger and their shoddy network performance. Last but not least, we were joined by former Tech Talk panellist and mobile network expert Mark Diggins. Mark's been living in the United States for a few years, and he's returned to Australia with his family now. Mark's been working at the coalface of emerging 4G and LTE technology in the US, and he joined us last year to share some of his experiences from overseas. You know you can keep in touch with the panel while we're on holidays. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is the best way to do this. We all see the emails to that address. Or you can follow us on Twitter. All our account information's on the Tech Talk website, which, you know, it's techtalkradio.com.au. And if you're listening on one of Australia's fine community stations via the Community Radio Network, you're very welcome to drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you and find out what station you're listening to. If you miss any episodes, they're all available for direct download on our website, and you know you can podcast, you can listen on the stream, and so on and so forth. All right, that's enough. You'll be hearing from me later in the program. For now, it's on with the show.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Let's talk about telephone companies, shall we?
Let's talk about telephone companies. A few weeks back, now, we referred everyone to a hilarious YouTube clip.
Before you go on, can we put a disclaimer in here?
I don't know. We should. Should we?
All right, we won't then. off you go.
We were bemoaning and lamenting the marriage of convenience, weren't we, that we all now know as VHA, Vodafone Hutchison Australia.
What did you call it? The what?
The marriage of convenience.
Oh, isn't I it? Wouldn't have called it that, but nonetheless, you have now.
It is. Maybe you should go ahead with that disclaimer. No, let's not. Vodafail, the musical, the brainchild of TV Live on Stage, which is a comedy duo comprised of Scott Dawkins and Shona Urquhart, and as I said earlier in the show, with a lazy 126,000 views.
Yeah, and you took it upon yourself to email them, and they took up your threat.
Yeah, in just 3 weeks. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely they did. Yes, well, Vodafail, the musical, it's certainly struck a chord. Scott, Shona, thanks for joining us tonight.
Oh, our pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
It's great to have you guys in the studio. Tell us about Vodafail, the musical. Where does one start?
Oh, well, it wasn't called Vodafail, the musical, to begin with. Its fans renamed it. We originally called it Telephone, a tribute to 3 and Vodafone.
Because it's to the music soundtrack of Lady Gaga's Telephone.
Yep. That's correct. And then it got renamed by its fans because Vodafail's got such a huge following on that website.
Yeah, the Vodafail.com.
Yeah, and we just did it for a bit of our laugh to amuse ourselves because our calls kept dropping out between each other.
Yeah, and to release some tension.
Yeah.
Scott and I would be on the phone to each other discussing things that we'd write for our show and it would cut out. So, like, we have to write this song.
But can I put that disclaimer in now?
Yes, do.
Dr. Ron and I used to be one of those customers, and I think in the 20-minute drive home, if we didn't have to redial about 5 times
that's a good day.
In the space of an eastern suburbs drive straight up a main thoroughfare, It was like time to churn, time to churn. Anyway, I'm going to play just a little bit of your, if, for those of you who aren't familiar with this wonderful musical piece, here's just a snippet of it. I'll play more of it later, but here, this is what it sounds like.
Hello, hello, baby, you're cold, I can't hear a thing. I ain't got no service yet again, you say,
What?
What did you say?
You keep breaking up on me.
No, my phone is not f***ed up, it's 'cause I'm with three.
It's 'cause I'm with three.
Get the message?
The online version. Yeah.
So I did catch a glimpse of your video on the ABC News the other night. So you've actually sort of got to the stardom fact that...
Bizarre.
Isn't it? Yeah. How did you feel when you saw that?
Well, because we didn't know. So people
tell
us.
It's always a shock. So like, shock.
I saw your thing on the telly, on the ABC News. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Today Tonight have used it. Sunrise have used it.
Did they didn't bother to ask you.
No.
But, you know, I suppose that it's on YouTube, it becomes free media in a way.
Yeah.
We end up finding out afterwards.
We don't care. Publicity. Thanks.
Were you expecting the media interest that it's received when you did it?
No.
Not to this extent. I think anyone who's with Three or Vodafone understands our pain and can absolutely relate to it. But it just exploded so much more than we anticipated. It was...
In fairness, a really good video for us before this would be about 1,000 hits. We were thrilled. So to get 127,000 for one is very unusual for us.
Absolutely.
So,
and still climbing.
And it's
great
because it's driven up all the viewership of all of our other videos because we've done other spoofs and we do a lot of character comedy and sketch comedy. So people are watching the whole channel now, which is... fun.
Yeah, it's really nice.
That's
really
good.
Nice.
That's good. You've got some
struck a chord.
Oh, you have. You've got some long-term subscribers now, hopefully, to your channel on YouTube. Have you had any feedback from Vodafone or Three or any... Not that you'd be able to get through on your mobile phones.
No.
They might be trying to call us, but they can't get through probably.
Yeah.
Have you churned yet or are you still waiting for someone, you're basking on a street corner to actually get the money to break the contract like you...
Shona has left me.
Oh, Shona!
I crawled out. I saw the light and went with Telstra.
She rubs
I never
her
knew
five
that my
bars in my, her, my face.
I never knew an iPhone could have more than two bars.
Oh, that'll make the promo. Yeah.
That little signal meter goes up to five bars. Yeah,
yeah, I never knew it happened. I never knew it could do it.
So now I revert back to the landline to call her.
Tell us a bit about the equipment that you've used to edit this and create this video.
Oh, look, it's terribly expensive.
Is it? Yeah.
It comes free with a Mac. It's called GarageBand and iMovie.
Yep. So also known in Tech Talk Radio here as GarageBand. Yes, so that's one of Andrew's, but you've used GarageBand to put it together.
All the sound was GarageBand, so it wasn't,
The limitation of GarageBand is it doesn't really have an auto-tune, so cut to us singing things over and over and over to get them perfectly in pitch, because there is no second chances.
Yeah.
So I had a few cuts from Shona at the end. Shona's much more musically minded than I am. She's violent.
Yes.
And how long did it take to put it all together?
The audio took about a week. That took the longest, trying to get everything right. But we filmed it literally in about 3 days.
Okay.
Because I had to be on a plane to Thailand, so it had to be done in three days.
So you've done all the recording, all the music, the lyrics, and then you go about lip-syncing and recording the...
Yeah, you need to have the audio done first, obviously.
Yeah.
So. Who wrote the lyrics?
Between the two.
The whole thing was a...
From personal experience?
Yeah, yes. It was just about three. It was written a few months ago and it was just about three. It was just, I was frustrated. I had to do something about it. And then, thank God, they merged and Scott was with Vodafone and they just kept getting worse. It was amazing. It was like we were meant to write this song about them.
Vodafone used to be so good. I've been with them since mobiles first came out and I loved them. I was a huge devotee and ever since that merger happened, ba-bao. So...
Andrew and I, tell a similar story. We were customers of Three for a long time, weren't we? And you were explaining.
Well, the reason why we were with Three is because Telstra used to provide their network background, but they pulled out 12 months ago, and that's when it went pear shaped. Went all downhill from there, and then they realised that they had massive holes in their network. And here we are today. You guys are singing about it. We've churned, and they've got to lift their game if they want to maintain a few customers going into the 4G domain. Anyway,
and like you're saying, where they had Telstra as a backup. And your phone would roam onto the Telstra network, onto the Next G network. Mm. It was pretty good. You didn't notice too many dropouts. But as soon as they changed that contractually and they started. They went down this this Vodafone 3 merger. Yeah, it's all just the wheels fell off.
3XEM on our chat says Vodafone demonstrates the need for a single network for Australia. Multiple networks for a country the size of Australia is just crazy. There's probably a bit of truth in that when you think that we've got multiple infrastructure right across the network. Didn't we see that with Optus and Telstra and the black cable that went down our streets in Melbourne for the pay TV and stuff like that? But no, we still do silly things.
There's a lot
like
of duplication
this.
Of mobile infrastructure. That's for sure. Tell us about the cameras that you use to shoot your video, because there's some pretty nice looking sharp images there that you've got.
It's just I bought it a month ago. It was just a little Sony Handycam. It was $750.
Yeah.
A little present to myself.
Cheap as chips, aren't they, these days?
Yeah. Unfortunately, he's back in the shop at the moment because it had started to make a funny noise.
Yes. A dial tone coming out of it or something. But, yeah.
Great vision. Luckily, we didn't need the audio for this particular video.
Yeah.
Mm. But Sony being quick to fix it, so bless them.
Okay. Do you remember the model number? Putting you on the spot now,
30 something. It's really, it's tiny.
It's about the size of my palm. Yeah. That's all I can tell you about. And it's black.
Right.
Yeah.
And it has a little screen.
Because that's important.
That's it.
The colour's important.
It is. I think it makes it faster.
Whereabouts did you do all the shooting for Vodafone?
Majority of it was in Scott's house or around Scott's house.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's a line about being in Newquay, so obviously we had to go on location and do things there. But just sort of parts of Melbourne that are recognisable to Melburnians and to the rest of Australia as well. And we had to sneak out and go out the front of a 3 store and a Vodafone store at 8 a.m. on Sunday when we knew no one would be there.
I saw the Paran market there. I thought, hello, they've travelled quite a bit to Paran to do that. But yeah, you didn't get who'd you get to wear the Vodafone T-shirt? The guy in the shop.
He was a friend from the Victorian College of the Arts. We went with, and we begged him. We were just like, we need somebody.
He played the role very well.
Oh,
I might have.
Funny. He's so funny. But the uniforms got made.
Yeah.
Himself.
That was a bit of... Really?
I thought it was like a real...
Who would give us a uniform.
I thought it was. That was a real employee with a real uniform and
Iron-on transfer.
We had another top that Scott practiced the iron-on transfer with multiple times before we actually had one that was good.
There's about 7 burn marks.
Now, does this performance make it to stage? Because you guys do theatre around town, don't you?
Yeah,
we do
a show a year, and we do it at Gasworks in Albert Park in Melbourne. We definitely do parodies live, but the video content is its own, like on YouTube.
Yeah.
And we don't repeat it in the show. We do all fresh stuff for the show.
Okay, cool. Mm.
So we don't want people to pay to come see something they've already seen.
Mm, pretty much the idea is that our show is a live show, but obviously we need to get changed. We play multiple different characters and do multiple different sketches. So the videos serve their purpose as costume changes for us, and so we're not leaving the audience with 2 minutes of nothing on stage. But our live show is in August and from 17th to the 20th.
All right. We'll put some details up online and you can certainly spruik it on our show. So how did you guys meet?
VCA, we went to
Victorian College of the Arts.
Yes, music theatre foundation course.
Yes, it turns out we're not terribly talented in the music theatre arena. We couldn't get jobs.
So it went downhill from there, didn't you? Yeah. We had to resort to comedy, yeah.
We had to cheer ourselves up, so we started telling jokes.
We took it out on Vodafone.
Oh, but you've done a few others, I think, on your channel. I've seen a few others along the way there. So.
Yeah.
But I think, yes, you've hit a heartstring with a lot of Australian consumers at the moment. With the telephone issues, and I think as we were talking about earlier on in the show too, the complaints against Vodafone have hit an all-time high. So as a result, there's no reason why your parody won't hit an all-time high as people come for the solace and it's not just me.
Yeah,
although I don't think we get expected to get translated into Turkish though.
That was
kidding,
was a
really?
Shock.
Yeah.
There's a Vodafone in Turkish video up on YouTube
that's had like a thousand hits. In Istanbul, The Age reported it last week.
Like, so you have created a monster, haven't you?
It's so bizarre.
We really have.
Have they dubbed it like over your soundtrack?
It's our video, but with Turkish subtitles.
Yeah, okay. I was wondering, maybe they...
You know you've made it when the Chaser Boys get hold of it. You realise that?
Parody of a parody.
Absolutely. So any plans for the in respect to more parodies? You sort of got your eyes on something new? Don't give away your secrets.
We're not
going to
give
that.
Anything away, but yeah, something's in the mix. Actually, just finished writing it on Saturday night, so there's something else coming.
So we'll have to watch your channel now. So we'll have to bookmark it, won't we?
Yes.
All right, Nate, you're at your Facebook page showing. You've got Facebook facebook.com/TV Live on Stage.
Yep.
Is that right? Where would you like people to go to follow you, to keep
Probably
track of?
The best idea is to go to the actual website, TVLiveOnStage.com. Mm-hmm. All our videos are there, information about the shows, the last show as well, just everything you need to know about the characters, and it's all there.
Good, good. And get links to the YouTube channel
and
everything.
And Facebook and Twitter and all that.
Awesome. How do we follow you on Twitter? What's your account?
TVLOS.
That's it. I think that's right. At TVLOS.
Yep.
If we want to follow you on Twitter. Very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, thanks for coming in, guys. It's terrific to meet you, and congratulations. You've done good work here, I think. You've certainly, as Andrew said, you've struck a chord with a lot of people out there.
It had to be done.
We certainly didn't strike a bar of reception, that's for sure. Never mind.
The puns are flying thick and fast in the studio this evening. Oh, these guys are professionals.
Write that down, Scott. That was a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, so everyone's got their pen and paper. Where's your next performance?
At Gasworks Arts Park in Melbourne.
Now, where's Gasworks? Is that in the arts precinct down near...
It's in Albert Park.
Albert Park?
Yeah, no, Graham I'm not thinking and of the one. Pickles, the corner of Graham and Pickles.
Okay, and the date?
August 17th to the 20th.
Oh,
it's
we should go along.
Wednesday to Saturday night.
Yeah.
Wednesday along. Yeah, all right, very good. Once again, thanks, guys. It's been great. We'll play the whole track. Well, not quite the whole track, but here it is in its sort of entirety. And once again, many thanks for coming in.
Thanks, guys.
Hello, baby, you called. I can't hear a thing. I ain't got no service yet again, you say.
What
did you say?
You keep breaking up on me.
No, my phone is not f***ed up, it's 'cause I'm with three.
No, my phone is not f***ed up, it's 'cause I'm with three.
Just a second, let me try another room, okay?
Baby, if I wave it around, I might hear what you say.
I should have gone with Telstra when they had that awesome plan.
It's not like I'm out in the sticks, I live in Paran.
Stop, fuzzy, stop, cutting out.
My status of sending MMS.
Stop roaming, stop jumping on hands free when I'm in my car.
I swear this phone's never had more than 2 bars.
I don't need to complain.
For God's sake, this is a phone affair.
Some breeze in the air and they fly everywhere, but they just never reach my turn.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So how do I do this calculation?
They called me on my mobile to ask me where the data was bad.
Or am I the last geek standing?
It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Probably a little bit harsh.
I'm remembering conversations I didn't have.
Can I just say...
That would be a benchmark.
It would.
Maybe there is truth to that.
No. Maybe.
Those same clueless people have now got iPhones.
Oh, dear.
Now, hang on.
Because it's entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Now, let's talk a little bit about computer games and films, because the two tend to go hand in hand together. Now, Brian, you were saying before that Ubisoft, which is one of the big... Is that how you pronounce their... Nodding.
Yes.
Radio. Ubisoft. What are they up to?
Ubisoft, one of the games, Prince of Persia...
that's a good one.
Yeah.
Well played, that one.
Walt Disney
Be a platformer. Oh, yes,
thumbs
yes.
up. Thumbs up.
Leaders put a I'm learning.
Platformer. Yeah.
Yes, Walt Disney made the film a couple of years ago, and it was estimated to gross $200 million, but it grossed $335 million. So Ubisoft was like, ooh, hold on a minute. So now they're making their own film studio, and they're going to start making films like Splinter Cell, Assassin's Creed, and Ghost Recon.
Wow.
So,
is this where we're going to start seeing games and films become even more intertwined? Is the game now taking over from the first run, and then the film will be made from the game?
I think so, because if you look at films like, what Marvel's doing with all their films.
Another cartoon film?
Spider-Man, Iron Man,
Are you sick of them yet?
Captain... It depends on how they're done.
What about the X-Men?
The new X-Men that Matthew Vaughn directed, I thought was quite good. Yeah. Liked them much better than the Bryan Singer versions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Bryan knows his movies.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I it all depends on the filmmaker and their studio. I mean, if you've got the Jerry Bruckheimers out there, who tend to be the money makers who don't care about film, they're the ones that you got to be careful of. But if you put a film in a director's hand who cares about the story, then you're going to get something like the new X-Men.
Well, that's it. It's all about the story, isn't it?
It is.
A lot of respects.
It is, definitely.
And the budget.
Has anyone in the whole X-Men sort of universe taught an American how to say the word or the name Xavier yet?
Exactly. I'm not sure. No. But Matthew Vaughn's actually British.
Right.
The one to
You'd
the,
think he would know how to say the name Xavier.
Exactly, yeah. They say Xavier.
Yes.
Yeah, Xavier.
They can't change that now. I mean, stupidly, it was said incorrectly from day one. So they can't go back now. It's just so firmly entrenched in the culture that it's there to stay, I think, which is sad.
Yeah.
I agree. It grates every time I hear.
A bit like Mahoney's Road.
Oh, yes. That's right. Mahoney's, yes.
There's words of Middle Earth here in the chat at the moment. Now, I know you're a big fan of Lord of the Rings.
Batman Avenue.
Lord of...
Batman Avenue, yeah. Yes, that's right.
Down near Robin Street.
Yes.
Sorry. Lord of the Rings.
The Hobbit?
The Hobbit, yes. Hobbits. Very. We all jokingly say that there's a Hobbit in every hill in New Zealand, but...
You'll love the odd spot.
Yeah.
Yep. Stay tuned.
Hobbits in the odd spot.
Great.
That's good. Yeah, no, Peter Jackson comes up with some great stuff, and all the Weta guys in New Zealand, because that's obviously where Avatar came from. Have you seen the Avatar video game? I haven't seen it. Is that anything that resembles anything like the film?
Played it,
the film?
A little bit of it.
Yeah.
I played it in 3D, actually.
Oh, really?
Which was pretty incredible. Yeah, 3D, it's very pretty.
3D video games. Mm. I've got one, but I don't have a telly. Dr. Ron's got, what is the GT5? That's 3D, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that other beach buggy racing game that I can never remember the name of.
Storm Apocalypse?
That's the one.
Yes.
Good work.
Oh, that one, yeah.
Made me seasick after 10 minutes. I turned it off.
Yeah. Brian, your experience in 3D films, you're not a fan of 3D films, are you?
I'm a very traditional film lover.
Why is that?
I don't know. I get immersed into the story. Story is the most important.
So is 3D distracting, is it?
It is. In my opinion, my personal opinion, it is.
Surely that would be the same for any technology, though. Colour could be distracting if it was misused. So 3D...
Well, that's true,
that is
isn't
correct,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at some of those old black
3D
and white
done
films.
Properly ought to be seamless and
immersive.
Yes. Immersive, as Lena's saying off mic here.
But I think studios and filmmakers, or mainly producers, do 3D because it's not needed. I mean, they just do it because, this is in 3D. Everybody come watch it. We want to make money. That's the type of film.
Well, you look at True Grit. I saw it across, I think it's last weekend or something. That would just not work in 3D.
No.
It's a cinematic masterpiece.
For cinephiles, that would no.
Yeah.
No way. That's
are you a fan film. Of classic old movies?
I'm a big fan, yes.
Like Hitchcock, for example?
Hitchcock.
Yeah. As in Dial M for Murder was made in 3D originally.
Ah, well, there you go.
So...
Was it really?
Yes, it was. Old Hitchcock film.
I'm talking about the 30-meter IMAX screen opening sequence of Avatar that makes you go blind and what was that sort of thing.
I enjoyed that film.
Yeah. No, I'm not knocking. I'm just, it's, yeah.
And in fact, a lot of it was done in such a way that it was immersive and the 3D, initially it was a gimmick at the start of the film.
Mm.
But by the end of the film, you were just quite used to it and you only watched, and you just watched the film, you watched the story.
Yeah.
So I think they were heading in the right direction with the 3D being...
It's a lot of, they've got a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. 3D works well with the all the Pixar animations and stuff like that.
I think that's a genre. The kids stuff is great. Animated.
It works beautifully, yeah. It does.
Because I think the rigs are a bit tricky to set up, as we saw probably.
I'm just a bit, I like the old stuff, so, yeah.
There are no television networks in Australia taking 3D seriously, Brian, here, except for Foxtel. Foxtel has one channel, I think, which has like 24-hour...
Is that serious?
3D. Well, that in itself is a question, isn't
there's
it?
There's not that much content out there,
but
though.
In terms of Freeview, there's nothing at all.
They tried.
When it was broadcasting 3D.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's
at the moment, I don't know that they're allowed to, because they ran the trial. The trial ran out, and there hasn't been...
Has there been a result of the trial?
Well, I haven't heard if there has. It hasn't hit the news pages, if it has. Well, not that I've noticed. Perhaps someone can correct me. Anyway, sorry.
No, I was going to correct
just
you.
Just an aside about the 3D TV. Yeah, it might well be coming when it's got regulatory approval.
3D. I think, it's an acquired taste.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. One of the new big films, which I'm quite looking forward to, is Aliens and Cowboys coming up fairly shortly. That's Spielberg at his... Have you seen Super 8 too, by the way, which is the new...
Yeah, it's a new J.J. Abrams film. Yeah, it's a homage to the old Spielberg alien genre type film.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's received mixed reviews.
Really?
Yeah.
Because he kept it top secret for a while and he didn't want to talk about it or anything.
He did
like that.
Keep it very, very top secret, yeah.
There's not even any trailers, were there?
Yeah, there was. There was really? A full feature. Yeah, yeah. They have to, I think it's a month or so prior to the film coming out, they have to release the full, 2 or 3 minute trailer. So it can't be that secret.
Oh,
yeah, certainly. I've seen trailers and stuff of it around somewhere. I'm not sure where, possibly on TV or somewhere like that.
But I think the big one at the moment is Transformers 3, Michael Bay's new film. And
got to be better than number two. Number two was like, oh.
He personally apologized for that. But anyway, I'll just keep
going. I think the film house personally apologized for it too, didn't they?
Well, he's used 3D in this. James Cameron's Fusion rig, the 3D rig. But what's fascinating is Michael Bay's a very old school filmmaker, and he's used 60% film, not digital, film, and 15% of the film is in 3D. So that's going to be a bit fascinating, the fact that they're saying this is a big 3D film and they've shot 60% on 35mm film.
Well, like, if they've shot two eyes on 35mm film, then that's a different thing, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Mark in our chat's just said, is there a 3D standard for TV? Afraid not, Mark.
yes, there are. There's several of them.
Yes, that's correct. Several of them. Yeah.
Standards, they use all of them.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, correct. The good thing about it, though, is 3D only works on high definition stuff. So people seem to think, oh, I'll get it on DVD. No, there's no 3D DVD sort of stuff out there. So anyway, bit of fun. So what else? What's news? The new JJ, speaking of JJ Abrams before, Star Trek, is it 2 or is it 12?
That's a good question.
Is it 2? It's the next Star Trek, generation.
They've put a lot of faith into them, haven't they?
They have.
To carry on the legacy.
Now, all of the Tech Talk people went and saw it the night that came out. It was one of our sort of films we went to see at IMAX.
And we did enjoy it. It was a fun night and a interesting film. But I'm curious to see what a film buff is going to say about the first Star Trek. Or the J.J. Abrams Star Trek effort.
I came along to see it as well. I thought he did a very good job. He a lot of lens flare.
He used a lot of traditional.
That was what I was wondering if you'd comment on the lens flare and the shaky camera and the
The shaky camera is a very Jason Bourne, Paul Greengrass approach. But I think it was effective in specific scenes. But I'm not a
much
big
more
fan
distractive
of,
than the 3D was in a lot of.
I agree with you. Yes, yeah. Lens flare hurts.
Did you see in the making of the efforts they went to shake those cameras and to create that effect?
$150,000 cameras a piece. Well,
the Panavision devices.
The Panavision devices.
And they had people standing there holding the handles belting inside them, belting the living.
Yeah, they had to get specially made map boxes for that sort of stuff, which is the. I won't go into too much detail. It's the box that goes
you have
on the
to
lens.
Explain yourself now. That's what happens when you come on.
The map box pretty much it sits on the top of the lens and stops the light from hitting the lens directly, which is quite ironic.
When they had people saying they were torches
because they're shining on the lens.
Why didn't they just take that box off?
Yeah, exactly. So they just held it and shook it. Yeah, which is the old school approach.
So J.J. Abrams, what stage are they at with the next Star Trek edition? Are they went to script? The script's finished now.
Finalizing pre-production. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we might see it in 2 years. Hopefully, it's not in 3D.
Hopefully, I hope so. But a lot of people are liking 3D. But anyway, each to their own, I guess.
Well, yeah. Who knows?
It's a gimmick.
It's still a fad. That's exactly
what I think. Yeah.
Let's meet back here in 2 years' time and see what everyone.
It's
see what's
been
happened.
A fad for 60 years now.
Yeah. It won't go away.
here's the fun fact.
At least we've moved away from the red and blue glasses.
It keeps coming round and round again. Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the fun fact. James Cameron's Fusion 3D technology. The Transformers 3, it cost $35 million extra because it's in 3D. So that gives you an idea of how expensive the equipment is and how expensive the techos are. Because it's probably a 20-30 man team, tech team.
The setup time would be horrendous in setting up 3D rigs and stuff like that. Yeah.
There's actually a behind-the-scenes stuff that you could have a look at with James Cameron and Michael Bay on Variety. I think Variety.com.
Okay.
Yeah, which is quite good.
Can't be that hard. You can buy consumer 3D video cameras.
Oh, don't start that.
Oh, here we go.
This is like that guy who made a phone on the iPhone and made a movie on the iPhone and won the award. That guy.
Yeah. 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 How hard can it be?
You're listening to TikTok Radio.
I'm surprised they don't stand out the front healing lepers.
Trying to model these proteins takes a huge amount of computing power.
It looks like something Lady Gaga would wear.
I think a lot of people did give them shtick.
The boot up time is actually faster than the mobile phone 7 time.
Circuit switch networks, packet switch networks, two different things.
How do you kill it?
Put it in the washing machine.
Then Graham replied,
yes.
Doesn't like the way it looks in jeans.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
And joining us down on the very end of the panel is our long lost panelist. He's also finally found his way back to the studio.
That'll go next week's promo.
Mark Diggins, welcome very much. Welcome back to the studio. And it's lovely to see you again and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, you can talk all sorts of new gadgety things, hopefully. What thanks, you've been doing in the United States.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Nice to be back. And I think you just moved into the studio when I left. I see it's getting a paint job already, so that's how long I've been gone.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. Anyway, yeah, Lydia left. She hasn't come back. She's still over there. She's in Palo Alto. She bought a house anyway. So anyway.
Making it permanent.
Making it very permanent. So, but no, it's good over there, isn't it? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we could have stayed
you
there.
You travelled.
I did travel a lot with work, particularly in the last job. I did 21 months and I was travelling up and down the East Coast and Canada. It was a great time seeing lots of different things. I mean, we'd got to the 3-year point and decided that, you know, it was either stay here now, like maybe Lyd's doing, or come back home. And mm-hmm. we chose to come home, but not because we were having a bad time or anything. It was great over there.
Well, but then again, you're back in Melbourne, and Melbourne's the best city in the world.
It is. It is a great city.
You never have to dig your car out of the snow.
Oh, particularly this season, too. It was really bad over there.
Yeah, I saw some of your photos.
The photos on Facebook and things like that, yeah. Oh, goodness.
You would have gone from minus 24 degrees to plus 24 degrees coming back.
Wasn't that the case when you came back? Wasn't it 40 degrees here when you came out of something?
A few days, I think it was like I'd finished work. It was in the week before I was coming back. 9 a.m. in the morning, it was minus 21 degrees Celsius. And I got back, the day I got back, it was 40 degrees Celsius.
So that's 61 degrees difference
in
temperature.
Change in about 3 days or something, yeah.
How did your body cope with that? Did it just go, no, you've got to be kidding, and pass out or something? Or
we just stay inside with the air conditioning and say, not used to this.
With the air con set to minus 24.
Yeah, that's right.
You would have had a nice 36-hour buffer zone in the plane, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't know about nice there, Graham. You know, it's like flying.
Yes, you're hermetically sealed into a recycled air-conditioned space for however many hours.
Having said that, I did fly via Australia, which is the first time we've done it, and we got upgraded to premium economy, and it was excellent. Really enjoyed it, new plane, and they give you noise-cancelling headphones, which was...
Is that because they're noisy?
Well, I don't think these newer planes are that noisy, but it was still nice to have the noise-cancelling headphones to use.
What type of aircraft was it that you came back on?
I can't remember, I can't remember which one it was, but the one with two engines, which I was getting worried about, because normally when you fly across that much water, you got four engines, you know.
Yeah, it's handy, although four engines hasn't saved you. I came back on an A380, which, as we know, what happens to A380s with Rolls-Royce engines on them.
Yeah, well, at least you got three others if one goes. You know?
Well, absolutely. Anyway, it's been a very interesting week in the Tech Talk Radio land, I guess. Dr. Ron, you certainly stirred up a hornet's nest last week with the Kindle references that you were making, doing some Kindle spotting on the train of recent times.
We got so much feedback about the Kindle, didn't we? It was fantastic.
We did indeed. We've also been running our App of the Week competition, and there's been some wonderful entries come in the door, which we've all been going, oh, that's interesting, isn't that great? So, yeah, keep them coming. Even via Twitter, I've had some come through.
Yes.
Which has been really good.
So, a lot of people approving of the Kindle. They say it's a great product, and they enjoy using it.
Well, shall we hit the Coro now? And you can read a few of those lovely emails we got in at feedback@techtalkradio.com.au or come and join us on the chat. chat.techtalkradio.com.au while we're on air.
Absolutely. This is like getting the band back together, isn't it? With Mark in the studio here and
absolutely.
Graham, all
There's
of
the
us.
Squeaky one's gone.
Yeah, the squeaky
now.
<one.
laughs>
Like no, she said it was a
yeah, you'll get my hell about that.
That'll get back.
It was a chair, she said last week.
Oh, that's right. A chair was squeaking. Yes. Lena sends her apologies. She's in Bris Vegas this week. So
I know.
Join us.
Have you been watching her on the Twitterverse?
And JD sends his apologies this week as well. I have, yes. She's been going crazy, but she's enjoying herself, though, I think.
Well, that's good. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Lots of bacon.
GJMCN via the contact form says, after listening to your last pod, two things come to mind. One, mind-controlled cars.
Mind control?
Did we talk about that last week?
Yeah. Well, no, we did. We spoke about Google computer-controlled cars, but GJ says mind-controlled cars. SBS ran a series called Prototype This, and in Series 1, they had this. I watched it, and unless it was a con, it really worked. I suppose might have been just a really good con, GJ. Who knows? The concepts and applications developed in this episode correlate well with wiring your car to your brain. He's put some show notes there. The original air date was 15th of October 2008. Episode name, Mind Controlled Car. Our team of inventors attempts to prototype a car that utilizes biofeedback sensors to restrict a car's performance as its driver's agitation level increases.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's probably better than what I was thinking.
What were you thinking?
Well, I was thinking the car would just do whatever you thought. So, you know, you think about turning left, the car turns left. You think about turning right, the car turns right. You think about running over that silly woman on the side of the road and you run her over.
What happens if I'm thinking about the Tech Talk radio podcast?
Yeah, it'll play it. It'll just, yeah, connect to the stream and play it through the sound system. Yeah.
What if Lena thinks she wants to eat bacon?
Well, it'll take some bacon and...
take you through a drive, the nearest drive-thru.
Maybe.
For a bacon burger. The second thing...
Notice how I've been very quiet.
Says GJ, is... a good read suggestion for your gamers, as the author is a bigwig with the Call of Duty series, and he has a great website for all the science of the tech that he has in the books. Demon and Freedom TM, techno-thriller series by author Daniel Suarez and Walter F. Parks, who produced the 1983 film War Games. He's optioned the film rights to Demon with Paramount Pictures. So there's a suggestion there from GJ. Thanks again. Keep up the good work. Thank you for the feedback.
And you might put that reference in the show notes when you do them on the forum, perhaps.
I shall. And where's the forum, Graham?
Forum.techtalkradio.com.au, where Dr. Ron writes notes on every single episode that we do with all the references and links and websites and things we talk about.
And apps of the week now.
And apps and gadgets and odd spots, yes.
Cisco in Oklahoma. Cisco's in our chat room.
He's on the chat tonight.
Yeah.
Hi, Cisco.
Cisco from Okla. He's in the chat room. Says via our feedback form, greetings all. Glad to hear you back on air. I love the new app of the week segment and Lena's new intro clip. She really adds another level
fan
of
mail.
Fun to the show. It's Lena fan mail. I wanted to build on something Dr. Ron said a few weeks ago when he was talking about how to deal with online piracy by making the content available for a fair price. I think Graham might have been talking about that as well. I encourage all of you to poke around into the world of anime, which is Japanese cartoons. I point this out for two reasons. The first is that some of you might actually like them. And he says, the second reason I mention this is because the process of getting anime from Japan has some interesting parallels with the online piracy argument. And he talks about what he used to do back in the 80s and buying VHS tapes and importing things. My point, though, at the end is that the anime experience in the US proves Dr. Ron's argument that people will stop pirating stuff in a large part if it's available for a reasonable price.
Yeah.
Not a perfect solution here at the moment, to be sure, but it does beat encryption so thick that you might not be able to watch the disc you just purchased on your own computer. Regards, Cisco in Oklahoma.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. And again, yeah, DVDs and Blu-rays with where you can't legally have a player on open source operating systems and stuff like that. So frustrating. So yes, he's quite right, and I think we've all made this comment in the past.
Have you ever been into anime?
I never have. I've never quite got the gist of it, I'm afraid. It's never got into my brain.
Andrew?
No.
Shaking his head. Mark?
No.
Shaking his head.
I think it's an acquired taste, but that's my personal opinion.
I think it is.
Mm.
Just on that, how cheap it is and alike. Many years ago when I was working for MobileNet, a manager at the time said he wanted the cost of mobile phone calls to be, he called it bubblegum. He wanted the cost to be the same as a piece of bubblegum so that people would stop thinking about the cost when they're making a mobile phone call.
Yep.
And they just use it just like their normal phone. And I think we're almost at that spot now. People pick their plans, but it's like you get, $50 and you get $250 worth of calls, which is bizarre to me coming from the US where you pay for your minutes and they tell you how many minutes, not how many dollars worth of artificial calls you're going to get, But if it's cheap enough, people just use them, forget about the cost, and that's what they were trying to aim for in those days.
I think that's right here. You get into a particular usage pattern, and it's just how you run your life. It's how you use your mobile phone, and you don't consciously think, oh, this phone call's, well, it's coming up to 5 minutes now. I better not go over that or something. You're just accustomed to using it in a particular way, and you find a cap that suits your usage pattern and you stick with it.
Yeah, I have a little app that sits on my phone which keeps me up to tabs with how much data I've used and how many calls I've made. And as long as I don't get too silly and carried away with it. But yeah, you're right.
I think most people don't even bother with an app that tracks how many calls they've made. I think most people just, yeah. I can remember back when we first got our mobile phones and if using the mobile phone, making a mobile call was a big deal. And people would never ring you on your mobile because, it's too expensive to ring your mobile. And exactly. Now no one thinks about it. You know, people will ring on their mobile because it's too far to get up and get the cordless phone out of its cradle.
Yeah, but it's also the way we're going these days where I don't want to talk to someone between you and me, Graham. Like, I don't want to talk to whoever might be living in your house at the time or anything like that.
That's right, yeah.
We're all so time precious these days. I want to speak directly to you. And if you're not there, well, bad luck. I'll leave a message or I'll leave a text or I'll get Telstra to try and interpret something for me and text it to you as well,
That's a good point, that person-to-person thing, isn't it? Yeah, because if you ring the home number, you don't know who's going to pick up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you remember those analog phones and the early digital phones where they actually had call timers on them and you could turn them on and off and
I've
people watch their call timers to see how much they were going to spend and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So,
not anymore. You just don't think about it anymore.
No.
Moving on.
Carl, via the feedback form, says, "Hi again, panel. I may have sent you the wrong Australian release date for the iPad 2.
Oops.
If I said the 27th of March, what I actually meant was the 25th of March. Yes, 25th of March for the release of the iPad 2. Having said that, I just bought a version 1 iPad for $150 off. I was planning to wait for the iPad 2, but the more I thought
listen to us last week.
Absolutely. The more I realised the original iPad was more than sufficient for what we needed, and a reduced $150 was irresistible. A low-res camera and faster processor just wasn't enough to make me wait for the new one. Looking forward to Monday's show. Carl."
Would that be a new one that Carl got there for $150? Or he'd be buying second-hand?
Version 1.
No, but is it a brand new version 1 or is he buying a second-hand off eBay?
Big W last week were advertising $200 off every model.
To clear stock.
To clear their stock. Okay. So if it was $699, you could have picked up for $499.
Right.
Whatever that flavor was. But just a flat $200 off everything. So, and that's how they're clearing their stock.
Very good.
It seems to be the consensus from the reviewers that the iPad 1 to iPad 2 is a sort of a minor, it's almost a bug fix release. It's almost fixing up a couple of things that they didn't quite get right on the first one. It's not a major new product.
Yeah. Well, yes.
They've made it a bit thinner. They've put another camera in it.
We should talk about that later in the show. But yes.
David, via email, says, "Tech Talk Radio. On your last show, your featured gadget was the Amazon Kindle.
Here we go.
I've got a Kindle 3G, so I thought I'd email you about it. I got my Kindle a few months ago and have been using it a lot since. The books are fantastic and cheap, but I'm emailing about the free 3G because you asked people to."
Yeah, we weren't quite sure how that worked. We thought that it might have been...
We're not Kindle users here, can you tell?
Built in and sort of all seamless to the Kindle user, but we weren't sure.
Well, David says he loves it. He says, "With the browser, there's an inbuilt browser for looking at normal websites, but it's a painful experience," he says.
It's not designed to look at browsers, though, look at websites, though, is it?
No.
It's designed to read books.
But the browser's designed for purchasing books, I think. It does work over 3G, he says, as well as Wi-Fi, all completely free of charge. The restrictions are, 1, you can't download any file type, only some of the supported ebook files. 2, you can't tether it. 3, there is no tabbing or windowing supported. 4, it's an e-ink screen, so black and white only, and no video.
And very slow to update too, I would imagine.
And 5, no plugins are included, e.g. Flash, and only basic JavaScript works, so no drop-down menus work, etc.
Yeah, from what I can gather, it's intended so you can do things like reading newspaper or magazine articles online rather than doing real web browsing.
David's given us an extensive email here with lots of good features about the Kindle. I'll just go
there's two pages of it here.
Yes. He says he uses instapaper.com. He uses that a lot for saving articles he finds online that he wants to read later. Impulse buying. He says he likes the 3G because he can buy books quickly. Often I've been listening to a radio show at work or talking to a friend colleague who recommends a book, and with the 3G Kindle he can look up and buy that book immediately. Wi-Fi hotspot. For those who think they'll just tether their smartphone to their Kindle for free personal document delivery, it doesn't work. Coverage, he said, is amazing. I've never found myself without a connection. He says, with Calibre, there's a program called Calibre. And if you go to www.calibre-ebook.com, you can use it for organising your ebook library. He says, the Wi-Fi only version, don't bother. It's only $60 cheaper and creates a whole lot of hassle. If you're struggling to find an extra $60, you shouldn't be buying a Kindle in the first place. That's a fair comment, David.
I like that, yes.
And why not a tablet, he says. It's a very different device. I carry around my Galaxy Tab and my Kindle 3G everywhere. The Kindle is for reading static text. The Tab's for everything else. The Kindle screen is just amazing for reading. Wow, that email turned out a lot longer than I thought, but I hope that provides a bit of discussion. Thanks, David. It's great feedback. Very good.
It was. I must admit, I raced out of the studio then when you were talking there. I went to bring my iPad into the studio. I have an iPad 1. And this was it the app of the week last week that Lena was talking about, which is called Flipboard? I love this app. This is really good. And it enables you to turn all your things that you follow into a easily digestible electronic newspaper.
I just saw Lydia on Facebook on that.
Lydia is on Facebook. And that's a long story, but Lydia, did you want me to take a photo? There you go.
No, it's done.
Oh, it's done? Okay, good. And I must admit, I find it's a really great way of reading things. So there's a lot of these apps coming out now where you can actually you can look at the content that you're generating socially in one easy-to-consume place.
Yeah, yeah.
Unlike Paperly, where you can read the newspapers that everyone churns out from time to time.
Which is paper.li,
yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, that's right. A wonderful service. And I think this is, it's really starting to make social networking really come together now, these sort of applications. And you can read it on anything. Well, maybe not the Kindle, but definitely on a lot of the apps and the smartphones and tablets that are out now.
Do you have television ads for Amazon Kindle here?
Haven't seen any.
No? Anyone seen one?
I haven't seen Amazon Kindle advertised on TV, no.
The one that I've seen, obviously must have been in the States because I couldn't remember, is one where they're at a resort and there's a girl in a bikini on a sun deck. She's reading an Amazon Kindle and the guy next to her, he's also there on a banana lounge with his, probably his iPad. It doesn't exactly show you, but it's probably his iPad.
tablet device with an LED LCD screen.
And he cannot read it, and he's turning it, and he's squinting, and then he turns to her and says, "How are you reading that?" And she turns around and says, "It's an Amazon Kindle, only $129.
I like it.
Yeah,
like
it's a really good ad, you know, and I just wondered if you'd seen it.
I haven't. Maybe it'd be up there on YouTube. Something like that.
I don't know what the price of them are here. I think that was, but I remember that ad because of that. You know, it was good line to use.
Mm. That's all the correspondence, Andrew. Sorry. Yes, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is where to send your feedback.
Okay. There's one you might have missed. From Mark Peterson. G'day, Mark. Mark came along to our show last year.
Oh, Marky
year.
Mark.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he said an email saying, just wanted to say thanks for the Moshi Bass Burgers that he won at last year's final show. Initially, he was going to give it to his dad as a Christmas gift, but after plugging it in, he was and being fascinated by not only its form and function, it had good sound. So he kept it and gave his dad socks instead.
See,
that's the spirit.
Oh, poor dad.
Hope he's not listening. Sorry, Dad.
See, you missed out, Marky Mark's dad.
I remember looking at those when they were passed through the studio and wondering what they were like. Obviously, they're not too bad. So
yeah, they're pretty good. Pretty good. You can pick them up on eBay, I think, for 40-ish or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
If you're that way inclined, it's really handy. I guess the best thing about it is it's just got a little 3.5mm jack on the back of them. You can plug them into like an iPhone or a phone in general or anything where you want to get sound out of a headphone jack, and away it goes. You just got to charge them up a little bit. So that was really good. So
I did see Mark's message come in. I'm sorry
did
I left
you?
That off my list.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how that happened.
Okay, very good.
It's an administrative error.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's all right. Considering the amount of a coro that we get these days, it's completely understandable.
In the Tech Talk Radio mailroom.
Yes, indeed. All right, lots has been happening, and yes.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
And our thoughts goes out to all of our friends listening to us north of us in Japan at the moment with the terrible news of what's been going on. Tsunami and earthquake wise, they received now the third largest earthquake in recorded history in Japan, and they upgraded it to a magnitude 9 earthquake the other day. I don't know why they would do that. What the difference? Maybe the judge's verdict came
well,
in
just,
or something like that.
Yeah, by examining the size,
they checked the
seismological data. I would imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a really great website, which I must admit I frequent regularly now for all the wrong reasons. It's the USGS website in the United States, which is...
the Geological Survey, is it that one?
Yeah, where you can go and have a look at real-time maps of earthquakes that are happening around the planet, and you can click the links and it takes you down onto maps where you can zoom in on your one of the Google products, and it takes you right down and shows you where it all happened and why. And yeah, the Google Earth program actually maps earthquakes in real time too, I've since discovered. So yeah, there's a lot of technology out there that's sort of allowing us to keep tabs on all that. But I must admit, it was one of those things. I walked into the room and I turned the telly on Friday afternoon, and there was live coverage of this big black wave that was sort of heading through fields.
It was absolutely horrifying to watch, wasn't it?
I thought it was a movie.
It took me
a minute or two of watching it to realize, hang on, this is real. This isn't one of those. I thought it was one of those end of the world movies when I was watching it. And then
2012,
it looked a lot like it. Yeah,
these are the outtakes or something.
Yeah. I was thinking, what on earth is this? And you see this black wave just destroy everything in front of it. It was when, you know,
floating cars. It's just like a movie, isn't it?
Oh, unbelievable! And of course, there's the untold anguish of the loss of life, as well as the destruction throughout Japan, which goes without saying, I guess, because, you know, I think we've seen Christchurch, we've seen Queensland, and now this, everything's going up a notch.
Well, we're sitting here last week saying how terrible it was what had happened in Christchurch, and we were watching all of the footage coming out of Christchurch, thinking this is absolutely terrible, and have a look at the scale of what's happened in Japan. It's absolutely horrendous.
Too many, one after the other. We need a rest from this stuff.
We really do, yeah.
I have a friend who's on a Facebook friend, a guy I used to work with, and he's over there at the moment. And he said that communications are down, but his internet was working. So he just put out a message on Facebook to let everyone know that he was okay, because all the other lines of communication he was using were out.
And that was one of the things I was hoping to talk a little bit about tonight, is that the traditional means of communications are failing, but somehow or other, Japan is so wide, either via radio networks such as wireless or Wi-Fi, right through to, I guess, a cable or DSL, however they get their broadband over there, but they still seem to be managing to keep on top of things.
Well, it's one of those things. It's just another method of communicating, and, you know, when things are falling down all around you, you use whatever still works, don't you?
Absolutely. So. And, of course, the media companies have really cottoned on to this. How many Skype video conferences have you seen pumped out on Channel 24 in the last little bit?
A few too many.
Yeah, there's lots of them. A few pixelated news. See,
not to mention screen grabs of Facebook entries and things on the news and all sorts of stuff. So, any communications channel will do when there's so much missing.
Yeah, and it's the Japanese are using social networks like Twitter, Facebook, and Mixi as cell phone networks are jammed following the earthquake last week. What would happen, Mark, to a telephone network in that sort of instance? Would it just literally fall over, or would it be? Are there fail safes in a network to try and handle loads across and to distribute loads around a network, or would it just sort of go, I can't handle this?
I can only talk from the mobile's perspective. Usually it just overloads. There's so many people trying to use it. So, you know, it's a snowball effect. You lock out one base station that puts load on the others. Then there's a lot of people trying to make calls. Then there's more people on edge of cell because they're further away from their local ones down. So they're using something further away. So that uses up more resources like power to talk to that particular user. And then, you know, there's call control mechanisms right through the system that says, you know, start offloading here and do this and do that, reduce the amount of traffic, you know, put data as a lower priority and that sort of stuff. But really, in an emergency, the whole lot just over the top. And that's why in Christchurch they were telling people to use SMSs, because it's a quick method to get through. It's only a small amount of data. It gets sent in overhead channels, so it doesn't take up a voice call. And then they can leave, if you're doing text, then you can leave voice channels open to emergency services to use.
Which is probably very handy in those times of need. Carriers were limiting voice calls on congested networks, with NTT Docomo, restricting up to 80% of voice calls, especially in Tokyo and northeastern Japan. You've got to think of the population that they have in that country, and the demand on the telephone network must have been unprecedented at that particular point in time. I don't know whether anyone knows, but do they have, like we have here now, which is the SMS warning system, where a government agency can send a text out to everyone in an area and sort of say,
I don't know what they have over in Japan. I know that NTT Docomo have always done sort of their own thing. They've almost been their own networks and own technologies. So they're only now starting to fit in with the rest of the world in what technologies get used and alike.
Yeah, well, apparently a lot of the Japanese ended up having to use payphones and things like that, which I believe the phone companies opened up to being free calls. throughout the course of it. But yes, Twitter, Facebook, and the regular channels, the videos, a lot of we saw first up have come through those social networking channels. So it seems it's quite clear now that Facebook and Twitter are playing major roles in today's modern communications.
One other bit of news I noticed coming out of Japan was that Japan as a whole moved 2.4 metres it was.
Yeah.
So that's going to have some implications for GPS-based systems and navigation systems.
You don't think of that, do you? That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, 2.4 metres, it's not enough to put you on the wrong road or to stop you in front of the wrong house. But it's enough for those GPS systems that do lane detection to detect you in the wrong lane, sort of stuff. So...
Absolutely,
and it adds to the uncertainty of the GPS device. So, you've got densely packed lanes and things.
The GPS itself is going to continue to work correctly.
Yeah.
All the maps that are underlying though are all going to be wrong.
Yeah,
now.
But the road is now 2.4 meters from where the map says the road is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's going to need to be updated and that sort of stuff.
The GPS puts you on the Earth in exactly the same spot it always did.
Yeah.
It's just that's now moved. That's now something else.
Yeah. The road isn't on that point. Yeah.
I was just having a look at the USGS .gov website at the moment. If you click through to the latest earthquakes in the past 7 days, there's now 600 earthquakes listed on that map, and normally there's 200, maybe, little ones around the place dotted. But majority of the activity is definitely around the Ring of Fire, which is the Pacific tectonic plate. It's pushing towards the east, towards Japan. So now there's volcanic activity and stuff like that. And, of course, don't forget New Zealand's at the southern end of that same tectonic plate too. So things are moving out there.
You don't have to use the US one either. Did you know that there's an equivalent of that service in Australia?
Really?
Yeah,
do tell.
Geoscience Australia.
Oh, yes.
You go to ga.gov.au and it's got that equivalent sort of information from an Australian point of view as well.
Excellent.
So Geoscience Australia's data would have contributed to the worldwide view of
I'll have to check that one out.
Of the earthquake in Japan.
Have they got a real-time map?
I don't know where they've got
maps. Hang on, they've got a map thing over there in product. I
haven't been there for a while. I'll tell you what I did notice when I was there.
Earth monitoring back, and reference systems, maybe.
Was that if you're in Australia and you do feel an earthquake, you can go to Geoscience Australia and you can fill in an earthquake report and help them to collect data on earthquakes that actually happen in Australia.
Mm.
So you can report how much movement you felt and if there was any damage and exactly what time you felt what, and help to contribute to the scientific understanding of earthquakes.
All right. I think you do that one, the USGS one too.
Yeah, no doubt, yeah.
The thing that sort of bothers me a little bit too, and hello to all of our American listeners, that California's on the other side of this plate. And, you've got to wonder what's going to happen over there, if something's going to happen. I don't want to moz anybody or anything, but goodness me.
This is another edge of the Pacific plate, which is also one of the plates that was involved in the Christchurch earthquake as well.
Yeah. There were parts of the western seaboard in the United States that sustained a lot of damage from after this earthquake that's totally destroyed, like the northeastern part of Japan. And they had video of this, the waves coming in, and it wasn't obviously on the same scale as Japan, but was destroying marinas and beachfronts just because of the
tsunami coming across.
Absolutely, yeah, because the same earthquake had caused the wave to radiate out.
There was a great picture I saw of a wave coming into San Francisco. And a very still bay, and you could see this wave rolling up,
It's absolutely astonishing that far away that the wave can still have enough power to do damage. It's because, as waves propagate outwards from a source, their power dissipates.
It's the inverse square law.
Yeah, exactly. It expands, so the power's spread over a wider area. So that far away, the opposite side of the Pacific Ocean, and it's still doing damage, that's astonishing.
Mm. Anyway, so from a technological point of view, I think we're going to see some interesting things now with Japan. Sony being one of the major manufacturers of consumer electronic goods.
It's going to have a massive follow-on effect for like Japan's productivity and economy.
Well, when you think about Japan, it's the third largest economy in the world. And like the American economy at the moment, they have 0% interest to stimulate their economy. And, yeah, this is not going to help in any way, shape,
it's
or form.
Well, it's a terrible thing to say, but sometimes a natural disaster can actually have beneficial effects to the economy as well, in that there's a lot of economic activity involved in rebuilding and restoring infrastructure and all that sort of stuff. So
maybe so commodity prices may go up, but
yeah, there's swings and roundabouts in effect. I mean, it's horrible to try and find a positive in something that's done so much damage.
Absolutely,
but yeah, the economic news is probably not all bad, and Japan's a very strong economy anyway, really.
It is. Though Sony have ceased production for the time being, their plants are up in that region. Also, I believe, and I could stand corrected, but a couple of car manufacturers, I think Honda and Toyota were two that came.
Well, none of those companies are going to feel any, you know, they're not in danger of going out of business because of something like this. They're going to come back strong and provide employment and all that sort of stuff. So
maybe not from a car manufacturer's point of view, but a lot of electronics, you know, the componentry level were made in that particular part of the world too. So,
yeah.
You know what it's like in motor vehicle manufacture here. If one component dries up, it has a flow-on effect to a lot of other
Production,
and it just stalls. You know, like if a particular part for a CRT can't be made because it's only made in one factory, which is now no longer, CRTs are going to be somewhat problematic.
So, what would you theorize might happen with, say, someone like Sony if they cease production in a particular plant? Do you think, like, is it going to be some time or prices?
I would think it'll be a pricing issue because they'll be able to source componentry from elsewhere. Yeah, you know, a lot of components are made in Korea and China, and of course in America and places like that. It's just a matter of they won't be able to use their own branded products. They might have to buy in from another manufacturer close by to keep their products up. But you look at Sony. Sony aren't just consumer electronics. They are a lot of things to a lot of people. Broadcasters live on Sony equipment. So, you know, it's all swings and roundabouts, I think. It'll just keep flowing. It might be some supply issues for a little while. But
yeah, they'll close down a plant for a few weeks, do some rebuilding. They'll get a plant up and running again.
And some price hikes maybe on certain items that were made in that plant.
Potentially. Yeah, but I think if you were in the market for a Sony product, now would be the time to buy. if you were putting it off, I wouldn't put it off too much longer. Otherwise, I think you'll see prices go up, but who knows?
There's another issue, of course, there's been a lot of damage done to the power infrastructure in Japan, in particular the nuclear power stations, which we're still watching to see what the outcome's going to be with those. And there'll be a lot of manufacturing that's shut down just until they get, you know, power up and running, and then they'll be able, and you know, if there's been damage to things like water supplies and so on, and once they get the basic infrastructure up and running again, the plants will probably open up and keep running again.
Well, yeah, and I think the first of the two power stations which has gone up was one that was going to be mothballed a couple of months back. But they kept it going because it's a 40-year-old plant or something. I think, don't quote me on that, but I think I heard the news that it was a fairly sizable, you know, length of service it's done, and they start cracking the pipes and the containment things sort of all get a little bit old, like we do, really. We all start cracking at about those sort of times, don't we?
Pipes start getting a bit old and all that sort of stuff.
If I could editorialise very briefly about those things, you're hearing comment in the news media at the moment about the dangers of nuclear power and, oh my goodness, there's going to be a meltdown and this, that and the other thing. Whereas what we're seeing at the moment is how resilient and how much can fail, how much damage can be done to a nuclear power plant and still not release the radiation from the main reactor. The main reactors on these power plants, even where there's been explosions and complete failure of the cooling systems and so on, still haven't breached the actual containment of the main reactor and haven't released any significant amount of radiation.
Fingers crossed, so that's where it stays.
Exactly. Obviously, we'd hate to see that change, and there's still obviously things that are developing situations, but I think the take-home message from watching all of what's going on with the nuclear power plants in Japan is not how much damage has been done to them, but how safe they are despite the massive amount of damage that's been done to them. So I think there's a lot of people out there missing the point, and a lot of news reporting that misses that point.
The other thing that people miss the point of, a lot of people have been saying, why don't they have coal power plants? You know, why don't they generate their power some other way? The Japanese people, they're relying to a very large extent on nuclear energy. And it's a pretty simple answer, I think. They don't have coal. They don't have the resources. and they don't have the resource industry that we do here. And if they want to be able to have the economy that they have, and like the first world, you know, top class economy, it's everything's running well, they've got massive production there, a massive population, they need to have nuclear power plants in order to support all that.
If you're going to talk about coal versus nuclear as well, we could talk about it on a purely safety basis. Even if you include the worst events at nuclear power plants in history, like is it the Three Mile Island and Chernobyl?
Yeah.
Even if you include those disasters and all the deaths and injuries that resulted, it's still a tiny fraction of the number of deaths and injuries in coal mining. Coal mining to support the power industry. So on a safety base, you know, nuclear power is frightening. Nuclear accidents are very scary, but even if you include the very worst that's happened, it's still thousands of times safer than coal mining.
And as you say, Graham, one of the worst earthquakes and tsunamis that we've experienced, you know, in history.
Yep.
And as you say, these things, it's a testament to their construction, their design, despite the damage that's occurred.
Yep, there's still been explosions standing up that have destroyed the building that contains the reactor.
Yep.
And that was a pretty big bang.
The reactor inside in the middle of that is still not breached.
Mm.
Yeah, no, they've done well. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio on a fairly interesting Monday night for us here, if you're listening to us live or in your pod down the track. Maybe things may have changed a little bit, so I guess it's time to move on. Also, last week we promoted the fact that Dave was going to come in from Microsoft this week to have a
Dave
bit of a chat
Glover.
To us.
Glover?
Dave Glover, that's the man.
Phone 7, he was going to come in on the 7th.
He was going to come in
and
today.
He was going to come in on the 14th.
Yes, and we did get a one of those unfortunate SMS Tweety type sort of thing saying, I have to go to Sydney urgently. So he will be in. He's promised. He said he's really sorry. And he will be in on the first Monday in April. I'm not sure what date that is, but that was the next available. He was very apologetic about it. So if you've been tuning in tonight, we're still going to talk a bit about Windows 7.
That would be
7.
The 4th of April.
That sounds about right, yes. He'll be in that night to talk a little bit about Windows 7. But there's been some major achievements in Windows 7. Dr. Ron, have you...
Windows Phone 7 you're talking about?
Yes, sorry.
As opposed to Windows 7.
As opposed to the operating system. Speaking of the operating system, may I digress?
Yes.
I've got a service pack.
Yeah, Service Pack 1 for Windows 7 and
that
Server 2008
snuck in.
Is out.
That's
snuck
in.
It didn't sneak in. It's been coming for months.
I booted it up the other day and it said Service Pack 1 had been installed properly. I said, really?
Yeah, it's been pushed out now with the Windows updates.
But IE9's about to become legit.
Yes, it's going to be released very, very soon. The IE9 release candidate's been fairly strong.
Yeah. How's your campaign of saving the world one browser at a time going, Dr. Ron? I've noticed your IE6 tweets during the course of the week.
There was some discussion during the week, wasn't there, in the Twitterverse? Yes, saving the world one browser at a time. I had a whole barrage of abuse and support and commendation and condemnation on Twitter after
so
I posted
took it all
that.
On the chin, did
no,
you?
No, I took it all on the chin, but yes, it was quite
water
amusing.
Off a duck's back, all those things.
I twit-picked a photo of my help about dialogue box, which was a nice fancy IE6 one at work.
And yes, I think I saw that. Yes. Disgraceful.
With the Tech Talk Radio webpage in the background that wouldn't load because the browser wasn't supported.
Can I go back to the service pack thing
for
a moment? I wanted to make a comment. In the old days, technical people like us, we'd see a service pack come out, we'd download the service pack, we'd burn it to a CD, and then we'd go around to all the computers we know and install the service pack off the CD. Do you remember those days?
Yes.
I certainly do, yeah.
Yeah. It's important to comment that that's not at all necessary these days. And in fact, that's usually counterproductive. It's going to be much slower and quite unnecessary and make you download a lot more than you need to. If you've been installing your Windows updates on Windows 7 as you go, and if you haven't been, you should... because if you haven't been, you're part of the problem. You're running a very unsafe system. If you've been installing those Windows updates as you go, then installing Service Pack 1 through Windows Update is going to be a much smaller download and a much quicker install because you've got most of it already. You've got most of it already in the cumulative updates that have been running. You know, every patch Tuesday as we've gone through the the lifetime of Windows 7.
So if you put on a new installation of Windows 7 now, it'll go straight for the Service Pack 1, which then retrospectively gives you all those roll-ups up to that point. So you've got one place to install and it does the whole lot. Is that right?
If you're putting on a new installation, then hopefully we'll have new disks from Microsoft that will include Service Pack 1 in it. But if you've got a machine that's already existing in the world, mm-hmm. what I'm saying is you've already got most of Service Pack 1 already. You don't need to worry about downloading it and installing it off a CD or anything like that. Just let Windows Update install it, and it'll be a small download and a quick install because you've already got most of it already.
Very good.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Internet Explorer is due on March the 14th, Graham. There you go, as you mentioned earlier.
Hang on, IE9. Isn't that today?
Could be. Yeah, I think it is, actually. Hang on, let me check my date. Sorry, it's a long weekend. I'm not sure of it, but yes, it is. It's due today. If you're listening to us, Microsoft has announced that IE9 will be available for download as of now.
It might be a couple of days ago.
Could have been, but they did.
Depending on what station you're listening to us on.
Yeah, it could have been. They did a release candidate recently.
Yes, they did.
It all comes out so quickly these days, doesn't it? So maybe when you do your next update on Patch Tuesday, they're going to foist IE9 upon you. Do you reckon?
They may or they may not force it immediately.
Yeah, not in
they
certain may... government departments, but...
Yeah.
Certainly for the consumer.
They might release it and have, and until there's a real problem that IE8 can't cope with, they might not force you to upgrade through Windows Update.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see what they do.
Oh, well, Microsoft has been dribbling out new features ever since it released its platform preview in March last year, 12 months ago, which has now gone through the beta and the release candidate stage. So this is it. IE9's here, guys. HTML5, live on. And I think it even deals with Flash a little bit too. There's something I saw in the news today about Flash as well. Anyway, let's talk about Apple, shall we? Apple takes 83% of the 2010 tablet market. So this just goes to show how popular these iPad thingies
are. Newfangled iPad thingamabobs.
Yeah, and coming with iPad thingamabobs, as you said there, Dr. Ron, is iOS 4.3. Now, Adam Turner's concern recently was the fact that will iOS 4.3 slow down the iPad? Well, I haven't been game enough to load it up and find out just yet, so I'm wondering if any of our listeners have put the iOS 4.3 on their iPad 1.
What version of the operating system are you running on your iPad 1?
The one before that. 4.2, I think it is. There's got to be a way of doing it. Hang on, I'll just open up here. I do actually have...
Yeah, you go start settings.
I do have start settings. No, it's an iPad. You just go settings.
Right.
And it's here somewhere, says he.
Start settings, control panel.
There's no about either. Oh. Okay, I give up. Hang on, maybe it's here, general. Reset. No. Oh, here it is, about. It's settings, about.
Right-click my computer.
It tells me how many songs I've got, tells me a Wi-Fi address, and it tells me my version is 4.2.1.
4.2.1, okay.
So what does 4.3 give you?
4.3 is really takes advantage of the new hardware features in the iPad, such as the camera.
The iPad or the iPad 2?
The iPad 2, okay. I beg your pardon, because the iPad 2's got the front and I think it's back camera on it as well.
Yeah. Yep.
And, it's probably got something there so it can detect when you put the magnetic covers on.
I went to the Genius Bar the other day.
And it does... hang on before you... Yep. Yes, the Genius Bar, hold that thought.
Yep.
It has multi-context touch now. So you can put 3, 4, 5 fingers on it, can discern how many fingers you've got on there. And so theoretically now on the iPad 2, you can... You know the little black button that they put on these things, like the home button, which takes you back to the
button that you get. Yeah.
Well, 5 fingers I think now does the home button, and you can scrunch things up and twist things, Anyway.
Okay. I hope it's easy.
I read someone iOS, in the chat sort of conned their mother into buying one. Go and try it on hers.
iOS is the operating system for iPhones.
For iGadget.
And the iPad Touch and the iPod Touch and the iPad. So is 4.3 available on all of those things? Or
it should be. I've got my Apple gadgets here, but I'm not going to upgrade my iPhone, which I gave to my iWife, because she's having enough problems as it is with her iGadgets. You know, on the iPad, you got the little the iPhone, you got a little red rocker switch in the top left hand corner. You probably don't, because none of you here have an iPhone. No, you're shaking. Anyway, there's a silent switch, and it took her a good part of a week to work out why that she couldn't hear the phone ringing because she'd accidentally bumped the switch on the top left hand corner of the iPhone. So,
right.
Yeah.
I can't say anything. It's your wife. What can I say?
No.
It'll get back.
It does get back. That's the problem with doing radio. She's probably listening now. She's come listening up on the tonight. Chat. No, she's not.
Your daughter was in the chat room before.
I know. I saw that. Yeah. Go to bed. School night.
Turn off radio now.
Absolutely. Anyway, Apple takes 83% of the 2010 tablet market. Now, that's a massive sway of what's out there. And I guess the only thing which probably would have come close to giving them a run for the money would be the Samsung device.
Can I take a guess? Yeah, the Samsung Galaxy Tab would probably be most of the remainder.
Yeah. In the 2010 third quarter, the iPad made up 93% of all tablet shipments. It's a pretty in-demand sort of... But it is. It's a revolutionary device. I bought one. You guys sort of laughed at me this time last year. I was in Palo Alto. We went down to the Cupertino shop. Yeah, because we bought one of the last iPad ones that was in existence.
We laughed at you because you said the last thing you were going to do was buy an iPad.
Yeah, well, we were stirring you up before you left. We said, you're going to come back with one. You go, no. We said, yes, you are. You
the worm, no, for research purposes.
The worm, research, exactly right. That's the same reason why I bought an iPhone. Yeah, and the same reason why it's gone west.
I got an email from Lyd. You'll never guess what Andrew bought today. I bet I can, Lyd.
So anyway, iOS 4.3 came out fractionally early, obviously, to coincide with the release of the new tablets. Be interesting to see if anyone out there actually has used it. I'm just having a quick scoot through the chat, but no one's owning up to anything in there at the moment, which is unusual for our chat.
I have a question.
Members.
I have a question. What were you doing in the Apple Genius Bar, Mark?
Yes.
Okay. My son desperately wanted an iPod Touch, and he got one for Christmas. Okay, so the fourth generation, it's running 4.2 version, I think it is. When we brought it back to Australia, he couldn't do FaceTime. FaceTime is the video chat type Skype thing from Touch users.
Did he go up to the man with his best American accent and ask him?
No.
Or did you do all the talking?
No, well, I had a very good experience at the Apple Genius Bar, and the problem got solved, and the guy was very knowledgeable. The only disappointing thing was the amount of time you have to wait to book in. And I guess I've been spoilt by being in the US. There's more Apple stores than there is here in Melbourne, sort of thing. So it's easier to get to. But you walked in, the guy tested it. He said, yep, okay, it's got a problem. I'll upgrade the firmware. You've got the latest one, but I'll reload it. He did that. The problem's still there. I'll swap it over straight away. We're done. And we walked out with a working unit. And it was a very good experience all around. Yep. So it was a simple thing, and it wasn't a hard... It was a hardware fault, but it wasn't there all the time, because if you reset it, it came good, but as soon as you went to use it again, it failed a second time. So it was to do with the camera. You could flick between the forward-facing and the reverse-facing cameras, and then it wouldn't do that anymore after you used it the first time. So, and it was and he said this that it won't happen again. It's only 1% of failures on these devices, so he said it's not likely to happen again.
This is the second really good news story we've heard about Apple's customer service in recent times, because Lena had a very good experience when her screen on her iPhone spontaneously developed a crack.
Yeah, it was just on a bedside table and it cracked.
Yeah.
And I bought it in the US, and I thought, this is a problem because I bought it in the US and I won't get a warranty, or it only works on FaceTime in the US. No. He said none of that matters. It's that you bought it in the US. The warranty's still valid, and there's no region thing. You can still FaceTime, you know, whether you're in the US or in Australia. So, you know, I think some countries, because their laws are different, but not between Australia and the US.
Is FaceTime big in the US, Mark?
At least my son and all his friends have got it. So they sit there and they play PlayStation. Like, he was doing it for like an hour and a half this morning because we were having a sleep in. But, like, I swear, he plays PlayStation 3 online with his friends in America. And we've got to get the time zones right, so it has to be in the morning here. And the whole time he's doing FaceTime. So the little camera's sitting on the floor.
Oh, he's got it propped up looking at him.
Propped up looking at him so he can see his friend playing. And he's doing a video call while he's PlayStation 3 Little Big Planet 2 with his friends, you know? And he did for an hour and a half this morning until his battery went flat, you know.
We haven't progressed that far yet. We've just stuck to Skype, haven't we?
We have stuck to Skype for now. Yes, while we're on our PS3s. Now, can you tell me, can FaceTime only be used over the telephone network? Or can you use it like on Wi-Fi?
Well, it's an iPod network? Touch, so it can only work on Wi-Fi.
Oh, of course. It's an iPod Touch. You said that, not an iPhone. So it can only work on Wi-Fi.
In that case, yeah.
In the States, I think it's crippled so that you intentionally can't use it on the phone network.
Yeah, so I'm not sure when you buy an iPhone with a version 4, whether it comes with FaceTime or you have to load it as an app or whether but I believe you can get it on the iPhone, but I don't know anyone who's got an iPhone 4 then I could actually tell
me. Oh, it's good that it works on the iPod Touch. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, and he's enjoying it, so it's really went well.
Mrs. Dr. On's got an iPod Touch.
How does she find it?
She uses it all the time.
Has she
loves
lost a library recently?
She hasn't lost a library. No, but she's okay. Loves her iPod Touch. She uses it all the time.
She's got the hang of syncing?
Yeah. She syncs. Yes, we had the great library catastrophe of 2009
yes,
or whatever
I
it was.
That. Yeah. That's what I was referring to. Where she inadvertently decided, I don't need these now, delete them.
All these songs are on my iPod. I don't need them on my computer. I'll just mark them all.
And does she have a fourth generation?
I think it is. It's a fairly modern one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you'll have to see when she next syncs whether she gets this new version 4.3.
What version is FaceTime available from? Do you know?
Well, my son's got, I think, 4.2.
I'll have to try and put it on and we'll try and do a FaceTime call.
I can't remember if it was 4.1.2 or 4.2. That, anyway, it was just like...
FaceTime's Apple's version of Skype video, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It's video and audio chatting.
Yeah.
But it's only to other Apple devices and it's only when you're on Wi-Fi.
That's good. Well, it should be because it gives you good speed through Wi-Fi, I would imagine.
But they don't want you doing it on the phone networks because you're depriving the phone networks of...
You mean they don't get enough out of us already?
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Good. Thanks for that. The Commonwealth Bank is now offering free security software.
Bank?
That's them.
Oh.
The Communist Bank, as Dr. Ron affectionately calls them. Says he's sitting there just smirking and saying nothing.
Someone
this
called
is radio.
The Communist... Yes, I didn't want anyone to know that I was smirking, but you've pointed that out to everybody. No, somebody called them the Communist Bank in some correspondence and it sort of just stuck.
It stuck, did it? It's a bit like Garbage Band for me.
It is like Garbage Band for you. It's exactly like that.
sorry, where were we? The Commonwealth Bank of Australia has begun offering its NetBank customers, which is the online portal where you come and check your bank balances and do your transactions, free security software after finding that only 56% of customers had security products installed. Customers were invited to use McAfee's internet security product at no charge for 6 months in accordance with a confidential deal struck between the bank and the vendor. So there you go. If you don't have any antivirus stuff on your machine,
then go and get a proper one and don't rely. Your bank is not a software vendor.
Couldn't have
spoken and authorised by Graham.
Thank you very much.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
One of the other arsenals in the tool too these days is, sorry, I got that around the wrong way. One of the other tools
in the arsenal
is find yourself... Sorry, Mark.
You've missed us, Mark, haven't you?
Mark's missed all this, hasn't he?
You've missed
this
banter,
back.
This live thing that we call live radio. No, Mark's lost it.
So where was I? One of the other tools in the arsenal is the fact that if you get yourself a good web host with reputable sort of quality company behind them, they do a lot of that preliminary catching of nasty things in your email as it comes in. I know that my email at the moment is pretty darn
email
good.
Email host rather than a web host.
Where you email, like at your domain, like a techtalkradio.com.au.
Yep.
They're quite a good host. And as a result, for the people that like sending you those nasty things in email, which is traditionally how you get a lot of those things, they don't even make it to the mail run, which is good. So you've just got another,
That's
someone else on your side, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, or if you've a medium or even a relatively small business, if you're running your own mail servers, you can put multiple security products on there. I mean, most of my, you know, my customers that are running Exchange servers have got something like Kaspersky on the Exchange server, but they've also got a outward-facing server that's running on a Linux server, running Sendmail, running an open-source antivirus product on that. That's, so the mail gets looked at twice before the user even gets it. So, yeah, there's the way to go. One other thing to comment is I'm a big fan of just using the antivirus product from the security companies vendors. They always try to upsell you to the security suite, and they've all got them. You know, Norton and yep. McAfee and Kaspersky and all the others. They've all got this security suite that adds on all sorts of extra features and parental controls and firewalls that block outgoing connections and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, Windows has got a firewall that blocks incoming connections for you already. Something blocking an outgoing connection is only going to save you if you're already infected with something. So, really, seriously. And in general, the security suites, I find, cause more trouble than they solve, because you find that you load up an innocuous application like Skype or one of the messengers or something like that, and your security suite blocks it from making connections. And if you answer the question wrong the first time, it's hard to find the setting to unblock it again later on. And you know, you just find that it's much harder to get things working if you get those products. And it's an extra, you know, it's an extra cost for not much benefit. So
a lot of those packages, Graham, I found a Foistware.
Oh yes,
you
yes.
install stuff, and you don't, you know, you. Clicking through the next buttons really, really fast, and you don't look at all little checkboxes.
Yeah, that's
that are
what
ticked.
I mean when they try to upsell you. When you go to renew after 12 months and you need to renew it, they say, oh, why don't you renew to the security suite? But they make that the first choice.
That's right.
So you have to then actively turn it down and, and no, I only want to renew the antivirus product. Thank you very much. Yeah, so as you're right. They do try and foist it upon you a little bit. So, worth watching out for that.
Now, I'm the same as you. I use Kaspersky on my computers at home still.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have a mail server.
And you're using the antivirus only or using the security
I'm
suite?
Using antivirus only.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
And I'm running a mail server which has got Spam Assessments for Spam. The,
Spam Assessments for Spam and Clam AV.
Clam AV for my mail.
Yep.
For
So, open source anti-spam and open source antivirus on your mail server. And then you've got a commercial antivirus looking at it on your workstation.
On the workstations, on the
so
clients.
So you've got at least two levels of thing there. Now, if you had an Exchange server running as well, you'd have three levels. You'd have the open source on the
Linux server
on the gateway on the external server. You'd have a commercial product on the Exchange server, and you'd have your product on your workstation. So things would get looked at least three times, and you can do it that way, or as Andrew says, you can use a host that does it for you, or even Gmail. Gmail is superb for both anti-spam and antivirus. I have
a few things in your toolkit though. Don't just rely on just one.
That's absolutely right. Any one of them can, you know, it's easy enough for them to miss something in an update, or for something to go wrong, or even for the application to just crash on your machine and not run for a little while.
Mm.
So it's important to have more than one level. Even if you've got a, you know, a Gmail account or a hosting provider that filters your email for you, it's still important to have the filter on your machine as well, because you just never know when something's going to slip through. You've got to have it looked at multiple levels, at every level.
Indeed. I came across a client's computer the other day. She hadn't done updates because someone told her not to. Oh, no.
Oh, I've mentioned this before. Yes, there's a lot of fear and uncertainty. Fear, uncertainty and doubt, a phrase was used on the show a couple of weeks
ago. FUD.
FUD. Sure, every now and then there's a Windows update comes out that does something bad or upsets your machine or whatever. But again, it's a case of balancing the risks. The risks of not doing your updates are massively worse than the risks of doing them, even though occasionally an update goes wrong. So, no, you must do your Windows updates on a workstation-level machine, set it to install them automatically at 3 in the morning or whatever time you're not using your computer, and make sure that, you know, when it says shut down and install updates, just let it do what it wants to do. It's very important. Otherwise, you're vulnerable to attack. You can have software gets installed on your computer, someone else can control your computer, you won't even know, and you're contributing to part of the problem. You're the one that all the spam is coming from. You're the one that's, you know, causing other people problems.
And goes through a lot of bandwidth
and
very
quickly.
And
you won't find out until you get your bill from your ISP at the end of the month, or you get shaped because you've gone over your limit.
You've got to ask, too, one of these days whether ISPs are going to take a little bit more proactive approach in saying, oh, there's malware or you're a bot, and pull you out and segregate
you. I've been in favour of this for a while. It's a big impost on an ISP to do this, but I think it's part of being a responsible part of the internet to detect machines that are sending out spam or doing other part of a distributed denial of service attack, and block that access and help, but also then help the user to clean up their machine. And I know that, TPG is a company that I've had internet connections with in the past. They're not the greatest network for speed. But they're pretty good on price and so on. But one thing I have noticed that they have done with customers that I know who've used them is if they've had an infection on one of their machines that's been sending out spam, they'll just block the mail port. Everything else keeps working. The user can't send mail. They ring tech support. All you've got to do to get mail working is to put the authentication into your mail client, and you can keep sending mail, and they'll help, and then you can start attacking what the real source of the problem is and clean the malware off your machine.
Yeah, Warlock in our chat says ISPs should block people who have zombie PCs, and I agree.
Yeah, but do it in a responsible and careful way and help the customer to clean up their machine.
Because you've got to bear in mind, too, that a lot of people that do these things consider it to be a bit of a competition these days, like the iPhone BlackBerry hacking competition that was held just recently. The iPhone 4 and RIM's BlackBerry Touch were cracked in a smartphone hacking contest. This is what you do these days. They obviously didn't touch any of the Android devices or any of the Microsoft devices, but in a two-day... of the porn-to-own competition at CanSec West in Vancouver, researchers took on smartphones after focusing on browsers the day before. So obviously there's a convention over there. The iPhone 4 was taken out by Charlie Miller, setting a record by winning a fourth year in a row. The floor he and partner Dion used has already been mitigated by Apple's iOS 4.3. So they've obviously found a little loophole in the operating system. So once again, look at your patching we're needing, Graham, and
yes,
fix it.
Absolutely.
Mark, it's been great seeing you again.
Thanks for having me.
Are you going to come back?
You going to come back?
Oh, yeah, I'll come back.
It's a bit like Wheel of Fortune. Are you going to come back next week and play again? Or?
I think Lena's back next week, so maybe another time.
Really? Oh, well, you never know your luck in a big city. All right, that's it. Bye for now.
That's it for the entire summer series. There is no more. Thank you for your company over the last 8 weeks. I hope you've enjoyed the highlights. If you've got any questions about anything you've heard on this week's program or anything you've heard during the summer series, the best place to start is our website, www.techtalkradio.com.au. Now, we are returning live next week. Andrew, Graham, Lena, Adam, Lydia and I will all be back live on Monday night, and you can listen live on FM radio or via the stream, or you can wait patiently for the podcast or syndication on one of Australia's many fine community stations by the Community Radio Network. If you do listen live, remember to log into the chat room on Monday at 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Summer Time. The address of the chat room is chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Come in there and say hello to the panellists while they're live on air and like-minded listeners. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. And we're also on Google+, so there's plenty of ways to keep in touch. Until next week, enjoy your technology responsibly. I'll catch you live on the panel. I'm Dr. Ron. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis.
Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget you can follow the panellists on Twitter. Join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.